From South Carolina Public Radio, this is the South Carolina Lead. I'm your host, Gavin Jackson, and this episode was recorded on October 7th, 2024, from South Carolina Public Radio Studios here in Columbia. And we got a programming note for you. We pre-recorded this interview, so apologies for not getting you the latest news from this week today. I had a scheduled vacation for the North Carolina Highlands, but no such luck. Instead, my mother happened to be able to visit, so I kept the time off, and here we are, folks. Now, that being said, this episode is my full conversation with State Attorney General Alan Wilson from This Week in South Carolina this week. I also spoke with Valerie Borline, author of The Devil at His Elbow, Alec Murdoch, and The Fall of a Southern Dynasty. We'll save that full interview for another episode, but spoiler, you can find that on youtube.com/South Carolina ETV. I know, but don't do it yet.
Well, fine then.
We don't have a wind down this episode, but we will in a future episode. And if you want to be a part of that, you can do your part by calling 803-563-7169. Give us a shout. Halloween is coming. What are you wearing? What should I go as for Halloween? So much we want to know. 803-563-7169. And of course, like we said in our previous episode, we will be having a live lead taping at our South Carolina ETV studios here in Columbia on October 30th. Lead taping, October 30th. Put it on your calendar. More details to come. Like I said at the top, this is my full interview with South Carolina Attorney General Alan Wilson from This Week in South Carolina. I spoke with the AG about multiple issues, including domestic violence. This is Domestic Violence Awareness Month. The state's crime report for 2023, election integrity, human trafficking, state executions, and more. Here, take a listen.
Every October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month, and in South Carolina, the Attorney General's office puts on its annual Silent Witness Ceremony. Looking back at those that we lost the year before, last year, it was 24 women and 6 men who died by domestic violence in 2023. Those 30 deaths did mark a continued decline from 36 the year before, 39 who died in 2021, and 39 in 2020, as well as 42 deaths in 2019. So when you look at those numbers, those sad numbers, sir, does that mean we're making progress in a state that has historically had issues with dealing with domestic violence?
Well, absolutely. I mean, in 23 of the last 25 years, South Carolina has been ranked in the top 10 in cases involving women killed by their domestic partners. Obviously, in 2020 and 2022, we have those stats for. South Carolina, I believe, was ranked 23rd and ranked 11th in 2020. So we are obviously moving in the right direction. We don't want to be high on that list, and there's a lot more that we can do. Obviously, we want to educate. There's a lot of people out there, mostly women, but men as well, who are in abusive relationships, and a lot of them don't feel like they have options. A lot of them don't feel like, you know, there's any course of action but for them to remain in that abusive situation. And we want them to know that there is a team of people out there. There's a world out there ready to receive you and help you get out of that role of being a victim and help you become a survivor. As you just said, we had the 27th annual Silent Witness Ceremony on the State House steps 2 weeks ago, or a week and a half ago, rather. And it was an amazing, amazing opportunity. It's the 14th year that I have been the Attorney General in conducting that ceremony. And, you know, when I'm up there reading off the names of the men and women who died, who lost their lives in that abusive relationship, they walk the silhouettes out on the steps behind me. And then when I walk back to my seat and turn around, that's the first time that I actually get to see the silhouettes. So it really is powerful. Our goal is to not only remember those who lost their lives, but to raise awareness and to be a beacon of hope and light to those who are still going through it so that we can avoid them ever being a silhouette on the State House steps.
Is there more that needs to be done at the legislative level to help combat this scourge in our state?
Well, I mean, every time we've gone to the General Assembly, like, for instance, about 7 years ago, I went to the legislature and asked them to reform our domestic violence laws. Our office helped write the new reforms to the criminal domestic violence statutes, and they were overwhelmingly and in a bipartisan fashion passed. And so we have already reformed a lot of our laws, you know, and it's not just, you know, you can pass laws all day long and you can enforce them. But honestly, you gotta break the cycle of violence in a lot of these homes. You've also got to identify those men and women who are victims of domestic abuse and get, you know, educate them that there are opportunities for them to escape that lifestyle. A lot of them don't know it. A lot of them are afraid of the unknown. Some people stay in a bad relationship because it's easier to stay in a bad relationship and they're more fearful. Others are completely and financially and totally dependent on their abuser And so we're trying to get the word out, try to raise awareness. We don't want any South Carolina citizen to ever be a victim of a domestic abuse, let alone killed by their partner. So that's what the whole point of these ceremonies are for.
I want to pivot now to the border and talk about human trafficking as well. You, like several other elected officials in our state, including the governor, Senators Graham and Scott, have visited the southern border. What was the purpose of this trip that you took last month as it relates to your job as attorney general?
Well, on January 2nd of this year, I had a press conference, and that was the devil in disguise, the state grand jury drug trafficking case that we busted. We basically indicted 64 people, six of them for murder using fentanyl in their drugs. When we worked with the local, state, and federal folks across the upstate of South Carolina, we realized, as we have with other drug trafficking cases, that literally every drug, especially the fentanyl that's coming into this state, is coming from south of the southern border with Mexico, and it's in conjunction with the Chinese government and Mexican drug cartels with fentanyl labs, and they're manufacturing the fentanyl and they're shipping it into the southern border, and it's going into the interior states within the U.S. We are one of those endpoints, and so I'm at the receiving end of this. I wanted to go to where it began and so, to understand. I mean, we litigate about the southern border. We try to sue the government to make them do their jobs, but I wanted to actually say that I had been there. We went there last month with two other state attorneys general. We met with the Texas Border Czar. We met with the Texas Department of Public Safety leadership and the Drug Enforcement Administration. What we learned is that over the last 3-4 years, there's been a 445% increase in the number of illegal crossings at the southern border. It has the number of people who were trying to enter the border, across the border and died, has more than doubled. And so we also learned that there are 32,000 unaccompanied minors that the federal government cannot find, and over 320,000 who have yet to be summoned to determine if we can even find them. So there's a lot of unaccompanied minors who are being used as drug mules or possibly human trafficking victims that we can't locate. And the last thing that we learned, in addition to, the open porous border, is that the incentive structure that the federal government's created for the policies at the southern border is creating a human trafficking and drug trafficking crisis in our country, and it's landing on the front doorstep of South Carolina, namely in the upstate, where it's coming in from I-85 in Atlanta.
Yeah, and well, I guess that maybe we can talk about human trafficking there too when we see this increase in this annual report that your office also deals with. When we look at 2023 data, SLED opened 357 cases that include nearly 500 potential victims, most of which were minors. That's up from 416 victims from the year prior. So do you think it is the border that's fueling this crisis? What do you think is leading to these increases when we see human trafficking in the state?
Well, first off, the vast majority of human trafficking cases I've been acquainted with are local in nature, meaning that, you don't want to stereotype them. It's not like all unaccompanied minors from the southern border. It could be, in fact, then one of the top relationships between a trafficking victim and the trafficker is a familial or a personal relationship. So it's not like, what you see in a movie where someone's kidnapped with someone in a ski mask and sold into sex slavery. It usually happens with a family or a friend or someone in the community, and it happens here on Main Street. So I don't want to stereotype the crime, but I will say that we do know, and I don't have statistics, but anecdotally, we know that a lot of the unaccompanied minors coming across the southern border are easily exploitable because they're not with their parents. They are being used to basically obfuscate or obscure the fact that people coming across are members of the cartels or members of other terrorist organizations, and they're using the children as a front to get into the interior of the United States. We also know that a lot of these kids do end up in trafficking situations. How many, we don't know, because there's tens of thousands we can't locate. They could be with their families, they could be somewhere, but they're not appearing for their court hearings. So that is a concern to me, and I do think it is fueling human trafficking, but I'm just as concerned about the trafficking here in South Carolina.
Yeah, and a lot of that is also labor-based, too, and a lot of those unaccompanied minors have been found working in factories across the country, too. But I want to pivot really quickly, since we have less than 5 minutes left, to election integrity and security. Are you concerned about the integrity of South Carolina's elections as we approach November 5th? Any concerns that you may have, or are you in contact with the State Election Commission when it comes to providing security and making sure there are no credible threats facing poll workers and the like?
Well, absolutely. I'm always, election integrity is always something I'm going to be concerned about. We had a meeting today with our team and with also election officials regarding, whether or not there are adequate mechanisms in place to purge the roles of those who are illegally here in South Carolina and who may have registered to vote. I don't have any data yet, but what I do know is there is an attempt to seek from the federal government people that they know to be here illegally and then cross-reference that with South Carolina voter rolls. And we are trying to support those efforts to make sure that the federal government supports the rights of states to purge their voter rolls of illegal voters or people who are not here lawfully. With that being said, it has been my experience that the federal government is not very helpful. They're not very responsive to our request to help us in that endeavor. So we're exploring all of our legal options at this time. In the intermediate period of time, though, we certainly want to be supportive of the election commission and election officials around the state if a need arises for us to engage in some lawsuits to protect the integrity of South Carolina's elections. We stand ready to do that upon request.
I mean, is there any evidence or any concerns that we are actually seeing illegals registered to vote in the state? I know there was some hubbub around that earlier in the year. The State House folks talk about immigrants registering to vote because they're provided forms, which is standard operating procedure. But have we actually seen people register to vote in South Carolina who are not legally allowed to, which is obviously an offense?
The short answer is I don't know the answer to that question, but it's like if you were boarding a plane and I could not commit to you that the plane was safe to fly, would you just get on the plane? I cannot commit to you today that our elections are completely and 100% secure in the sense that there aren't ways for people to get on the voter rolls who should not be on the voter rolls. I do believe the voting machines obviously have been vetted, but I know people have concerns about those as well. With that being said, our goal would be to do everything that we can to ensure that only people who are entitled to vote in the state of South Carolina and vote only one time and aren't dual registered are allowed to vote. Anyone who is not lawfully here or lawfully able to register should not be on the voter rolls, and we want to support those efforts. So that is what we're looking at in that capacity. Again, we do not have a very good partner with the federal government. That is what concerns me.
Mm-hmm. But again, you're still looking into this matter. There's no claims at this time, and we have seen no evidence yet to substantiate any of that.
Well, I would say I speak to AGs in other states. They have recognized that they have identified that there are illegals that have registered to vote in their states. We have not yet identified individuals in our state. But again, until I'm able to have the data available to me to verify that they have not been registered, I'm still going to be very concerned.
And AG Wilson, we have less than a minute left, and I want to ask you quickly about executions, because on September 20th, the state upheld the convicted murderer Freddie Owens' death sentence by lethal injection. That was the first execution in the state in 13 years due to the passage of a shield law. They could obtain that drug to kill him with it. The state Supreme Court has now set November 1st as the execution date for Richard Moore. How frequently will we be seeing these executions take place now that the process has restarted and there are some 31 inmates on death row in South Carolina?
We have six people right now who have been teed up, meaning that they have exhausted all of their appeals, and we were just waiting for this process to be implemented. The court has given us 35-day buffers between executions before those can be filed. And so I would expect probably about every month to month and a half for at least the foreseeable future, you're going to see an execution in South Carolina. There's at least five more people who are ready for that sentence to be carried out, and there could be several more added by early 2025.
Gotcha, and we'll have to leave it there. That's Attorney General Alan Wilson. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you.
And thanks for listening to the pod, y'all. You can find that episode on youtube.com/South Carolina ETV, and you can always show us your appreciation by leaving us a review on Apple Podcasts or a call at 803-563-7169. You can stay up to date with the latest news on scetv.org and southcarolinapublicradio.org. And don't forget to support your local newspapers. The South Carolina Lead is a production of South Carolina Public Radio. Our producer is A.T. Shire. Amy Crouch is our supervising producer. Sean Birch is our executive producer. This podcast is produced with support from PRX and is made possible in part by a grant from the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, as well as listener contributions to the ETV Endowment of South Carolina. For the South Carolina Lead, I'm Gavin Jackson. Be well, South Carolina.
Little baby Rena, she's in for it. She might get the Eden afterwards of the harmony between humans and machines.
I think you're hoping for the best for your poor daughter.
Exactly. The harmony between humans and machines before the Borg come.
The Borg.